Hello, and welcome to Sobercast. We provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in a podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Also, if you're a member of NA or have friends that are, please tell them about our other podcast, NAPOD. NAPOD features NA speakers and workshops in the same format as Sobercast. We upload a new speaker every day, and it's easy to subscribe by searching for NAPOD, N-A-P-O-D, all one word, on any podcast player app, or go to napod.xyz if you'd like to listen online. Hope you enjoy the podcast and have a great day.
Hey, welcome to the surrender session of Back to Basics. Together we're going to take steps 1, 2, and 3 in the next hour. But before we do that, a person came up to play Stump the Archivist, and I love to play this game. I want to explain that by profession, before I got too sick to work, and I'll get into that in a little bit during the session, but I'm a chemist by profession with a master's degree in statistics, and I keep thinking that all those years of my drinking and drugging, that it just wiped out that side of my brain, and I can't even balance an equation anymore, a chemistry equation. It's all gone. But this side of my brain, which was history, I never took a history class in my life. I hated history. And God has a great sense of humor, making an archivist historian out of somebody who hated history. But that's the truth. And this side of my brain seems to be untouched by the alcohol. And I just have this this capacity for learning our history. And it just seems to be osmosis. It just comes. Where did the red dot come from? The background on that is, first of all, a person came into the rooms in the room in New York City named Florence Rankin. And she was our first woman. And she was the one that was listening to them talking about the book. The original title of the book was 100 Men, and said, "You can't call this book 100 Men. I'm here. I want you to call this book 100 Men and One Woman." True story. And Bill and they looked at each other and said, "We can't call this book 100 Men and One Woman." But they realized they also couldn't call the book 100 Men. So they started looking for a new title, and some of the titles that were floated was The Way, The Way Out, The Empty Glass, The Dry Frontier, and The Bill W. Movement. I'm not sure who floated that one, but I think I have an idea. Yes, The Bill W. Movement. But then this guy by the name of Joe Wearden comes to one meeting and one meeting only. He is a writer for New Yorker magazine, a literary genius who has drank himself into oblivion and has a wet brain, and he's in the Greystone Insane Asylum. But they let him out for this meeting. They hear about this Bill W. guy working with alcoholics in Manhattan, and so they let him out for this meeting. And it's the only meeting he ever went to because he drank after the meeting and was locked up again. But during this meeting he said, "You're trying to write this book, and you're looking for a name for it. Why don't you name the book after yourselves? Why don't you name the book Anonymous Alcoholics? I tell that you're trying to remain anonymous from what I'm hearing, and obviously you're all alcoholics." He didn't say he was, but he said, "You are." Didn't include himself. And silence in the room. He said, "Then how about Alcoholics Anonymous?" And to that, Bill replies, "Alcoholics Anonymous what? Like, what's the subtitle?" And he said, "Alcoholics Anonymous, period. It doesn't need a subtitle." And that's where the red dot came from in terms of our dust jacket for the first edition big book, which was the dust jacket that was used from 1939 to 1955. Okay. Session number one. What we're about to participate in is a reenactment of a series of 1946 AA beginners meetings during which newcomers take all 12 steps in 4 one-hour sessions. Please keep in mind that in 1946, AA was the only recovery program, and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the only published recovery literature. We realize some of you here today may have problems other than alcohol. We want you to know that you're welcome to take the 12 steps with us, and all we ask is that.
You have a problem other than alcohol, substitute your addiction, affliction, or compulsive behavior for the word alcohol each time you see it or hear it during these beginners' meetings. If you do this, you too will recover as the direct result of taking all 12 steps during these 4 one-hour sessions.
Okay. In the 1940s, the beginners' meetings produced a 50 to 75% recovery rate from alcoholism. Now we're going to take you through the same process that Dr. Bob, our Akron, Ohio co-founder, and many AA pioneers used to achieve these remarkable results. We'll show you the sheer simplicity of the original AA format, and we'll guide you into the fourth dimension of existence of which we'd not even dream. Okay, this is not one of the handouts, but it is in the yellow book. They started keeping score of beginners' meetings for three cycles, and that's what they call the cycles. Three cycles, you take the steps three times, or take the steps twice and sponsor once, take the steps once, sponsor twice, take the steps once, sponsor once, or help them. Any combination of taking the steps, sponsoring, produced a 50% rate. 50%
of them did not turn again. If you went to the beginning for 6 months, 70% of them never went again. This is where that 50 to 75% recovery rate came from. And I find it interesting
that you didn't start keeping score until you've been through the process a minimum of three times. You don't just take the steps once and rest on your laurels. Minimum of three times through the process to get that 50 to 75% recovery rate. Okay, now we're going to do time travel back to 1946. Little Twilight Zone.
It's now 1946. Welcome to the first of the 4 one-hour beginners meetings that will change your life. During these sessions, we'll guide you through the 12 steps as described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and you will recover from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body known as alcoholism. We have found a way out, an answer to this insidious illness. As members of AA, we're here to share our solution with you, a spiritually based program of action that will remove your compulsion to drink and provide you with a new way of living without alcohol. Our names are Wally and
Patty,
and we are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We lead these meetings to help ensure our sobriety. Our reward is to watch people recover and to see them work with others. We'll begin this session by reading a statement from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. On Roman numeral page 13, XIII, and I do need to take a time out on that. We're using the page numbers from the fourth edition of the Big Book. If you have a third edition, other than the introduction, you just subtract 2 pages, and then in the doctor's opinion. But all the rest of the page numbers are exactly the same, whether you have a third edition or a fourth edition. But on Roman numeral page 13, XIII, starting with the fifth paragraph, we find,
"We are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted."
Can you hear that okay in the back? No, we need to up. Yeah, this one has to come a lot closer in. Yep. Sorry.
That's all right.
There we go.
We're working out the electronics to go here.
All is well.
We'll make it work.
Yes. The book we're reading from, we've got the greatest electronics. electronics in them that I experienced.
We're reading from is AA's textbook for recovery. This is the only book we'll use during these sessions, except for an occasional reference to an AA pamphlet, newsletter article, or source material that was used to write the big book. What we read sums up the AA program quite well. We are not a religion, and we don't get involved in politics, psychology, or medicine. The big book was first published in April of 1939. It was written by several of the first 100 men to recover from alcoholism. Again, it's not a sexist book. It was written by men for men. When the book was published, they weren't actually sure if a woman qualified as an alcoholic. We certainly have learned differently since then, yes? But please keep in mind that when the big book was first published, there were no women on the AA program. In fact, the original title of the book was 100 Men. It was written by men for men. Now, of course, there are many women in the fellowship, but that wasn't the case when the book was first released. So we can complete each session within an hour and still have ample time for questions. We request that you write down anything that you do not understand or need clarified. We are here to pass on the AA program as we with our interpretation of their program. Therefore, we'll do our best to keep our personal opinions out of these presentations. In order for the process to work, we're going to guide them through the 4 one-hour sessions. Newcomers do not attend beginners' meetings alone. Their sponsors and sharing partners are the process. Earlier, I matched everyone up as sharing partners. Here are some of the guidelines for being a sharing partner. And these guidelines are part of mimeograph packets. And the guidelines are...
For the sharing sharing partners satisfies the conditions of a closed and outstanding friend. Please discuss your checklist with man or Part 3. If your inventory contains specific items that you feel you should be shared with a third party, such as a person, a clergy, a psychologist, or a counselor, explain this to your sharing partner. Make a commitment to your partner as to when, where, and if you need to share those portions of your checklist. If you acknowledge to your sharing partner that you will talk over those particular inventory items with a specific person or persons by a definite date, you can proceed with the rest of the steps today. Between the third and fourth sections, share your guidance with your partner so he or she can see prayer is working in your life.
Now that everyone has a sponsor, a sharing partner, knows what is expected of them, we can begin. Let me just ask, has anybody come in late that didn't get matched up with a sponsor or sharing partner? Are we okay? Okay, three more coming and we'll work with them at that time. Okay, everybody's matched up here? Okay, right now we're good and we'll ask that question again as we do the second session. Okay. In the first paragraph in the foreword to the big book, which is on Roman numeral page 13, XIII, the authors state,
to show other alcoholics how we recovered is the main purpose of this book.
This edition is we. This is a we program. We read the big book passages together, we take the steps together, and we recover together. So the big book authors immediately tell us that the purpose of this book is to show us how to recover from alcoholism. This is a revolutionary statement, because before the big book was written, there was very little hope for alcoholics. Now, anyone who is willing to follow the directions that they have provided can recover. This message of hope is expressed again in the third paragraph on page 17. Page 17, paragraph 3.
One of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can. This suffer from alcoholism.
The first paragraph on page 44, the authors describe the alcoholic and tell us what it's going to take to recover. Starting with the fourth line, they write, there's one of those big book understatements. Probably alcoholic. And to make sure that everyone understands what we just read, we're going to read that last sentence again, and it is. So we now know what we have to do in order to recover from alcoholism. We must undergo a life-changing spiritual transformation. That's all. Just a life-changing spiritual transformation. But that life-changing spiritual transformation can be something as simple as seeing the world differently. Instead of seeing the world as a prison cell with us locked in the middle of it, we see the world as a recovery triangle. Instead of being separated from the world, we are now part of the world. And that qualifies as a psychic change in and of itself. But we realize that this spiritual experience or spiritual solution is not the answer many of you expected to find in Alcoholics Anonymous, myself included. But please keep in mind that alcoholism is a fatal illness. Prior to AA, most alcoholics either died drunk or were locked up in jails or insane asylums. Let's see what we can learn about this spiritual transformation. In the first paragraph on page 45, the big book authors state,
that was our dilemma. Obviously, but where and how? Power. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. It means, of course, that we talk about
God. These are two key paragraphs. First of all, see the divine thread that weaves all of this together. They didn't start on page 1 and grind out through page 164. They handpicked the passages that were necessary to introduce the program to the newcomer and to get the newcomer to realize that we do know what we're talking about, number one, and number two, we do have a solution and we are not going to keep it under a bushel basket. We're going to put it out there for the world to see. You're going to know what that solution is in a matter of minutes. But I find it amazing that they took the newcomer in their first meeting to the solution. Sometimes today you hear, oh, don't bring up God in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll scare the newcomer away. Wait a minute. We're already losing them at such a rapid rate now. How could we do any worse? But number two, in the early days, they immediately took you to the spiritual solution. They didn't hide it from you. They immediately took you to page 45. And it says, the power will solve your problem. I can't solve your problem. Your attorney can't solve your problem. Your PO can't solve your problem. Your guidance counselor can't solve your problem. The power, we can help, but it's the power that solves your problem. And it's power with a capital P. And it's in the big book again and again and again. They use many different names for this power, including creative intelligence, universal mind, spirit of the universe, creator, great reality, and God, among others. They use the word God merely for convenience rather than for any religious purpose. Please refer to this power by any name that you believe in or that you feel comfortable with. With a notable exception, and that is that it has to be a power that resides within you. And that is described on page 55, paragraphs 2 and 3. Where do we find the power?
Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down, in every man, woman, and child, there is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. For faith is in a power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feelings we had for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found.
And in the next paragraph, for those of you who are fortunate enough to have a big book, third and fourth line, it says, search diligently within yourself. So by definition, that power cannot be a rock, it can't be a light bulb, it can't be a doorknob, it can't be your car. It's something, a power that resides inside of you, according to the people who wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So there is a qualification in terms of what this power really is. It's inside, not outside. That's why this is going to be an inner journey today. So now we know where to find this power. Much of the rest of the big book is devoted to the question of how to find this power. Basically, we become empowered. We go from powerless to powerful by taking the 12 steps. This is how we become empowered. And I want to squash that one right now, too. I'll always be powerless over alcohol. You haven't read the big book. The only people that are powerless over alcohol are the people on step zero. If you've taken the steps, then you become empowered. Then you're no longer powerless. Powerless is step zero. Just want to throw that out. We've provided you with a list of the 12 steps along with the page numbers where each step is found. We've also included the specific location within each step that contains the directions for taking each step. It's on the mimeographed handouts that we've provided for you. I truly believe in looking back upon and time out in my early life that my first drug of choice was that mimeograph solution that they used to run these copies off with. You get higher than a kite just breathing that stuff. Does anybody even remember mimeograph solution? Yay! There's a few of us. Okay. Thank you. Look at the first drug of choice, 8 years old. Oh, where did I go? Where did that come from? Okay. Let's begin with the first step, and it reads.
Step one, we admit it, we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable.
Surrender is essential in order to recover from alcoholism. The Big Book authors devote 51 pages of the book to the first part of the surrender process, which is to admit we have a problem. The authors begin by describing the physical and mental symptoms of alcoholism. Later, they ask us to acknowledge that we are alcoholics. Before we can do this, we need to know what an alcoholic is. Much of the first chapter of the Big Book is based on two letters written by Dr. William D. Silkworth, a physician at Towns Hospital in New York City. In the late 1930s, very little was known about alcoholism, but much of what Dr. Silkworth wrote then is still relevant today. And I find that to be quite an amazing circumstance. I do have here a article, Time Out, that was written July 13, 2005 in the USA Today. It says, "What's up, Doc? Medical research often wrong, study says." And basically what this article is saying is that about 45% of all medical research is either refuted or modified within 5 years of its publication. 45%. And here we have two letters written in 1938 when very little, there was no molecular biology or any of that, that has stood the test of time for all of these years from 1938 to 2009, with the exception of one word. Everything in the doctor's opinion is just as true today as it was when it was written. And that one word is allergy, and it's only subject to interpretation. Some medical doctors say that alcoholism isn't specifically an allergy, it's just an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Others say, yes, it does qualify as an allergy. One word out of the whole thing after all these years. Divinely inspired? I think so, because they just didn't know that much about alcoholism to nail it that totally and completely in 1938. So for several years prior to 1934, Dr. Silkworth had been treating alcoholics in Towns Hospital with very little success. Then during his fourth trip to the hospital, Bill W., one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, discovers the spiritual solution to alcoholism, which he helps develop into the AA program. One of the things that Bill learns while he's in Towns Hospital is that he does have an abnormal physical reaction to alcohol, coupled with a mental obsession. Now let's look at this abnormal physical reaction to alcohol. Alcohol is a poison. The normal reaction to the consumption of the poison, ethyl alcohol, is to have one or two drinks and stop as you feel the effects of the poison. But that's why we're here. We have one or two drinks to get started. We don't feel the effects of the poison the way other people do. I know that this poison label is not on the bottles of beer and bottles of whiskey that are now available for sale as a result of prohibition just recently being repealed. Wink, wink. But this poison label is on the bottles of ethyl alcohol in the chemistry labs where I used to work. If I was to conduct an experiment that required ethyl alcohol and I took the bottle down off the shelf, that skull and crossbones was on it. Now, I know that the liquor industry is very powerful and have kept that skull and crossbones off the beer and whiskey bottles, but the truth is, ethyl alcohol is a poison, and the normal reaction to consuming the poison ethyl alcohol is to feel the effects of it and stop consuming it. That's the normal reaction. But we also have an obsession of the mind. Our mind deceives us into thinking we're okay, even as alcohol is bringing us closer and closer to death. If our mind didn't delude us into taking a drink, we would never trigger the physical craving for more and more and more alcohol. Believing the lie that we don't have a problem is illustrated in this AA Grapevine cartoon. Here's our friend in the doorway looking up at a passerby. I'm not powerless over alcohol, I just can't get up. That's the delusion. That's the mental obsession. Look at the guy. He's in a doorway sleeping it off. He's got a rope for a belt. He's lost a shoe. I mean, my God. But that's the lie. We don't see the reality. A couple years ago, somebody came up and said, Wally, I think you're misinterpreting the cartoon. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, look at him. He's smiling. Oh, yeah, he is. He didn't lose a shoe. He found one. That's why he's so happy. So we have an abnormal reaction of the body and an obsession of the mind which dooms us to an alcoholic death. On Roman numeral page 29, XXIX, Dr. Silkworth tells us, our only hope is a life-changing conversion experience. This is from a medical doctor. Starting with the third line down from the top of the page, Dr. Silkworth writes,
after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomena of craving develops, and they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over and over and over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for his recovery.
And what is this psychic change? It's an alteration of perception. Instead of seeing the world as a hostile, forbidding, and lonely prison cell of addiction, we see the world as friendly, safe, and secure. Part of the world and not separate from the world. So a prominent doctor in the field of alcoholism states that the medical community cannot help us. Our only hope is a spiritual awakening. In the next chapter of the big book, titled Bill's Story, Bill W., our New York City co-founder, describes how he overcame his drinking problem. In this chapter, we learn more about the physical and mental symptoms of alcoholism and more about the spiritual solution. In the first 7 pages of his story, Bill describes the progressive nature of his drinking. In the 1920s, he was a successful Wall Street stock analyst. And I am going to take a break on this because this is one of the most profound things that I've learned in terms of history repeating itself. And my question is, where is Bill Wilson today when we need him more than ever? This was Bill and Lois in 1925 through 1927 on a motorcycle traveling throughout the United States, Eastern United States, doing what was later to be called field stock analysis. Rather than just believing the prospectuses and balance sheets that were submitted on Wall Street, Bill, and he's the first person to do this. If Bill didn't go down in history as the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, I truly believe he would have gone down in history as the founder of the field stock analysis school of stock buying on Wall Street. He went out to see if there really was value in these stocks. And he would drive the motorcycle and they would arrive at the production plant and he would count the trucks going in and count the trucks going out and he would talk to the union workers or the laborers, and then he would actually sometimes pose as a salesman and go and talk to the purchasing agent. He would learn everything he could about that plant looking through the gates and looking through the chain link fence. And then he would call Wall Street and say, buy or sell. Bill was paid 5 cents on the dollar. When they invested a dollar or bought, say, 100 shares of stock, Bill would get 5 shares. Bill, in 1929, was a millionaire doing field stock analysis. And again, this economy is in a major, major downward spiral because for years and years, we were buying and selling stocks based upon paper value rather than real value. And that's what Bill Wilson determined in the 1920s, and we're living right through it again right now. People not going out there to see if there was actual value in the items that were being sold on the New York Stock Exchange. So again, this is also a doctored photograph. Bill was under the influence so much of the time. It was Lois that drove the Harley. Yay, Lois! Lois drove the Harley and Bill slipped off in the sidecar. Great piece of our history. But in a few short years, Bill loses everything. He becomes a hopeless, unemployed alcoholic. In the first paragraph on page 8, Bill has a moment of clarity. He realizes he's powerless over alcohol. He is licked, defeated.
No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I have found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretches around me in all directions. I have met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master.
But Bill cannot stop drinking on this admission alone. In late November 1934, an old high school friend, Ebby T., visits him. Bill is drunk. Ebby's been sober for several months. When Bill asks Ebby how he stopped drinking, Ebby tells him, "I've got religion." And that was a hook because he knew Bill was not a religious person. That did get Bill's attention. Bill is shocked, but he lets Ebby continue, and he writes, "My gin would last longer than his preaching." Well, Ebby didn't preach to Bill. He actually just explained the simple process that he'd gone through in order to recover himself. Soon after Ebby plants his seed, Bill checks into town's hospital, and there, under the direction of Dr. Silkworth, Bill is physically withdrawn from alcohol for the last time. While in the hospital, Bill takes the equivalent of the 12 steps as we know them today. Actually, he takes the 4 steps of surrender, sharing, restitution, and guidance. These were the 4 Oxford Group steps. Surrender, which is our steps 1, 2, and 3. Sharing, steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. Restitution or amends, our steps 8 and 9. And guidance, steps 10, 11, and 12. We do have a story timeout in the back of our big book. He sold himself short. Earl T., in that page 263, Bill talks about the 6 steps. Or they write about the 6 steps that were in the 1938. When Bill left the Oxford Group in the fall of 1937, he took the 4 steps, converted them to 6. If you look at that story in the back, he gets the steps out of order. He's got people listening to the indwelling spirit as step 2, before you even do the inventory and remove the blocks that are separating you from the indwelling spirit. So the fellowship said, "Bill, this isn't going to work. You got them out of order." So in December of 1934, he rewrites the 6 steps and gives us 12. But the 12 are a mirror image of the 4 that came from the Oxford Group. So with Ebby as his guide, Bill takes the steps in... It's in our book. One day. Not a month. Not a year. Not no steps for the first year. Not the steps are optional. He takes the steps in one day, recovers, and never drinks again. And later he writes, "Here are the steps we took." Basically what he's telling us is, "Here are the steps we took in one day." Just like we're going to do today. He takes the steps, has a sudden conversion experience, a psychic change. In the second paragraph on page 14, Bill describes his spiritual awakening.
"These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory, followed by such peace and serenity as I have ever known, never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up, as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound."
Now, Bill has a rapid conversion experience. There is one of the mimeographed handouts that explains this in terms of we receive divine guidance through 4 channels: sight, sound, sensation, and knowing. We're actually going to test these channels this afternoon. Most of us have one primary channel and possibly a secondary channel. Bill receives divine guidance through all 4 channels simultaneously. And that was his conversion experience. These were revolutionary, drastic proposals. What were the proposals? The four steps of surrender, sharing, amends, and guidance. But the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. He feels electricity tingling through his body, sensation. There was a sense of victory followed by such peace and serenity as I'd never known. He has a sensation of victory, sensation of peace, sensation of serenity. There was utter confidence. This is a knowing. He knows he's having a conversion experience. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. He sees himself on top of a mountain. He hears the wind, sight, and sound. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. Another knowing. So Bill receives divine guidance through all four channels simultaneously. Sight, sound, sensation, and knowing. And as I said, for most of us, we have one primary channel and a secondary channel, and we will test those channels this afternoon to find out what they are. Okay, now it's time for us to begin our personal journeys towards the spiritual awakening that will change our lives. Let's see who's ready to take the first step. It reads,
Step 1, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable.
The big book authors tell us exactly what we have to do. In the second paragraph on page 30, they write,
we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we are alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, had to be smashed.
In order to smash that delusion that we're not alcoholics, we're going to ask each of you to answer a simple question. Are you ready to concede to your innermost self that you are powerless over alcohol? In other words, are you an alcoholic? All that's required is a yes or no answer. And again, for those who are here taking the steps on something out of an alcohol, just substitute whatever it is that you're having difficulty with. Maybe you don't believe you're an alcoholic. Maybe you think you're here by mistake. We just want you to know we'd rather be inside the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous by mistake than outside the fellowship. Drinking and dying by mistake is something to think about. Now, will those who are ready to take the first step please stand? And we're going to ask that you answer the first step question with a yes or no. And the question is,
do you concede to your innermost self that you are an alcoholic?
It's a question, question mark. I know you're jumping the gun on me. Question, question mark, yes or no answer. And your answer is
yes. Yes.
Wow. According to the Big Book authors, you've now taken step one. Nothing more is required. Please be seated. Woo! Now, I know we've got a very large room. If the room was smaller, we'd ask that each one answer individually. Why did they do that? They were looking for the no's. In the 1940s, the newcomers were coming in much faster than they had people more. They didn't have enough people to sponsor. So they started taking people through the steps in a group. And basically what they were looking for were the no's. And for anybody that's familiar with the 1946 format, you only took the first step in the first meeting. So if anybody answered no, they would assign three or four home group members to tail you for the next week. Yes. And they would tell their story, they'd maybe check out this big book and read more passages to you. But the concept is they did not want anybody to die. They did not want anybody not to make it. Anybody who answered no was assigned three or four home group members to work with them for the next week. And hopefully they would say yes sometime during the week, and then they would rejoin the group and take the rest of the steps starting in the following week. But that's the way it was done in the 1940s. Again, they did not want anybody not to make it. Okay, step two. Step two reads,
step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Okay. Restore us to sanity. So what we're going to do now is look at the second part of the surrender process, which has to do with the power that we talked about earlier with a capital P. We've admitted that we have a problem, and now we're going to look at the solution to that problem. And that solution is tapping into the realm of the Spirit, quote unquote, from the big book, which is the source of the power greater than ourselves that will free us from the bondage of addiction. In the middle of page 46, the authors ask us to set aside any contempt that we might have for spiritual principles and consider our own concept of this power greater than human power that resides inside each and every one of us. If we do this, we'll be in a much better position to understand the AA solution for alcoholism. Starting with the third line in the first paragraph, the Big Book authors write,
"We found that as soon as we are able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God."
Again, power with a capital P twice, and then God with a capital G. Again, for convenience, not for any religious purpose. Basically, the Big Book authors tell us it is impossible to fully define the power of God. We have to stop trying to grasp this power with our minds and start accepting this power with our hearts. In the first paragraph on page 47, they explain the concept of God as you understand God.
"When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this is all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wish to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was."
Once again, we need to make a decision. We have to decide whether or not we believe in an indwelling spirit, a God of our understanding. In the second paragraph on page 53, the Big Book authors write,
"When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fiercely face the proposition that either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be?"
Well, guess what? It's now time to choose. Are we willing to concede that there is a power greater than ourselves? If we are, we're ready to take the second step. In the second paragraph on page 47, we find the directions.
"We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built."
Okay, now let's see who's ready to proceed. If you believe in this power, capital P, that resides inside each and every one of us, come and take the second step with us right now. If you do not believe in this power, come and take the second step with us right now. Because that's what we just read. And this is the second step hook. The hook on the first step is unmanageability. The hook on the second step is that you don't have to believe. All you have to believe is that I believe. If you're willing to believe that I believe, you can take the second step on my belief system until you develop a belief system of your own. How does that work? Well, guess what? I have come to believe. Not only have I found recovery in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and contented sobriety, but I've also been able to face many hardships. 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with terminal incurable stage 4 cancer. They found it through exploratory surgery. They opened me up. They found that it metastasized. It was in my vital organs. So they buttoned me up, and they basically sent me home to die. What they actually did is they said, do three things, and that was make out your last will and testament, clean out the garage, and take your last trip. My last trip was to Detroit, Michigan, to do my last Back to Basics seminar, and I did say goodbye to the fellowship then. It was audio taped, and those tapes are available. James H. was there at the time, 94 years old, and he's going to continue the work, and I'm saying goodbye. And they were to start the chemotherapy that following week. The plane left Detroit 2 hours late. When it got to Phoenix, the Phoenix to Tucson plane had already taken off, so they put me up at the Hilton Hotel at the Phoenix airport, and I'm walking in the parking lot at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I heard the voice. And the voice says, do not let the doctors poison you. You were poisoned in Vietnam. Seek non-toxic treatment for the damage caused by Agent Orange. I'll never forget that as long as I live. That was my guidance. Just so that you're aware, I put that guidance in the front of every one of my guidance books. But it's ingrained in my memory, in my brain cells. There's no way I'll ever forget that night. Do not let the doctors poison you. You were poisoned in Vietnam. Seek non-toxic treatment for the damage caused by Agent Orange. Based on this guidance, I turned down the chemo. And 6 months later, they can't find the cancer. No medical intervention whatsoever. Only by your prayers, only by faith and prayer was I healed. Do I believe? Absolutely, I believe. So if you don't believe, yeah, praise God from whom all blessings flow. If you don't believe, take the second step based on my belief system. So we're going to let you stay seated, but the second step question is,
do you now believe, or are you even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself?
It's a question, question mark, yes or no answer. Do you believe, or are you willing to believe? And the answer is
yes.
Oh, blow the doors off this place. Yes, you've taken step two, according to the people who wrote the book and implemented the book in the 1940s. And step three reads,
made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him.
Even though we may believe that the power of God is the answer to our problem, this doesn't necessarily mean we are willing to implement this solution. In order to recover from alcoholism, we must make a decision to put this power to work in our lives. On pages 62 and 63, the Big Book authors show us how to become God-directed. But first they disclose how operating on self-will keeps us separated from the spiritual solution to our difficulties. In the first paragraph on page 62, the authors declare that it's our selfish, self-centeredness that gets us into trouble. We need to take responsibility for our selfishness and ask the God of our understanding to remove the shortcoming from our lives.
Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They rise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must rid of this selfishness. We must, or it will kill us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid.
Now, I don't want to move too far ahead too quickly, but we do have an assets and liabilities checklist that we use for the fourth step. And that assets and liabilities checklist looks like this. And I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but selfishness is not listed as an asset. It is a liability. Oh, I know. It's listed as a liability. Selfishness, self-centeredness is living in the problem, not the solution. Then in the third paragraph on page 62, the authors tell us what happens once we rid ourselves of this selfishness.
This is how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well.
So now we know our place in God's universe. Contrary to what we may have thought in the past, the whole world does not revolve around us. Realizing there's a power greater than ourselves is the essence of God consciousness. As we become aware of the realm of the Spirit, quote-unquote, our lives change. And this is a quote from the Big Book. We lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. It is decision time once again. The Big Book authors state we are now ready to take the third step. They even provide us with a prayer we can use to take this step. The prayer is in the middle of page 63, starting with the second line in the second paragraph. Okay, before we do the third step prayer, both the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer, the visualization of that is the recovery triangle. The recovery triangle came to us from Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife. There's a concept that we'll get to as we make amends about converting barriers to bridges. And that's how it was described. We convert a barrier to a bridge by making amends to people. Sometimes they're accepted, becomes a two-way bridge, sometimes they're not. But either way, we're trying to convert barriers to bridges. And Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, would do it with thumbs and fingers. Barriers to bridges in the presence of God is a triangle. That's where our recovery triangle came from. Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife. Barriers to bridges in the presence of God is a triangle. One of her favorite sayings was, faith without works is dead, which is in the Big Book three times. That's again, Bill's tribute to Ann Smith. Three times in the Big Book. Faith without works is dead. But the third step and the seventh step prayer is a triangle. We're praying to the power at the top of the triangle. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Take me out of this prison cell of addiction, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. What are the difficulties? Well, they're the first four things on the liability side of the assets and liabilities checklist. Resentment, fear, selfishness, dishonesty. We're going to learn about them immediately after the third step prayer. That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. I'm not doing this for me. This is not a selfish program. It's a selfless program. I am doing this so I'm given the power to help you, help others. That's the visualization of the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer of the recovery triangle. So let's do the third step prayer together. Are we ready? God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. Okay, according to the Big Book authors, we've now taken the first three steps and we did it in an hour. Yes! Three steps, 1 hour, 71 pages of the book. Okay. That's enough for this session. During the next meeting, we will provide you with guidelines for taking the fourth and fifth steps. You'll fill out a four-step inventory and make arrangements to share it with another person or persons between the second and the third sessions. Okay, let's take a 15-minute break. Let's reconvene at 10:55. We're going to have to try to hold to the 10:55 to finish up by 12.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.